Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have three martinis today. One is both good and bad. One is definitely bad, and the other one's just flat out crazy. So pretty close to a normal slate today, but there's nothing normal, Jim, about life in the Houston, Texas area right now, or really anywhere along the southeastern Texas Gulf Coast. Most Americans, I'm sure, are well up to speed on the devastation caused by Hurricane Harvey. Not even so much the wind, although there were certainly parts of Texas that were devastated by that as well. But the incessant rain that still won't go away and is leading to rainfall totals that would have our jaws on the floor if it was snow. So this is just numbers that we really don't see very often, if at all. We're going to, first of all, talk about the bad part of this, and that, of course, is the devastation that's being suffered there. And then the good part of this martini is just the way that neighbor is reaching out to neighbor, first responders, working to the point of exhaustion, just people looking out for each other. Let's start with the scope of the disaster. This is courtesy of ABC News.
Overnight, more than 4 inches of rain an hour coming down, millions waking up to a scene of epic flooding. And tens of thousands calling for help, needing rescue. The 911 system overwhelmed. Neighbors and strangers, you see them there, stepping in to help. The disaster here is staggering by every measure. More than 2,500 rescues, 3,000 state and National Guard service members activated, and forecasters now predicting some areas could get 50 inches of rain. The National Weather Service already calling the storm unprecedented and beyond anything experienced. And here in Houston, we are heading into another night of torrential rainfall.
And if that weren't bad enough, there are other dangers, including what's in the water and what else this storm system could potentially provide.
With bayous and rivers overrun, that contaminated water, a potential toxic soup containing oil, gasoline, or raw sewage. Another danger in the sky, the threat of tornadoes.
So it's just endless misery for the folks there. We pray for their safety. We pray that rescuers can get to folks. But there's just so many people in need right now. And that's where we pivot here, Jim, to the personal stories of neighbor helping neighbor and the first responders getting to folks. Here is live coverage from a Houston reporter who actually tipped off first responders to a truck driver who was about to be engulfed by waters on a low-lying road.
I'm sure he's very, very wet, very cold, very frightened. I am terrified for him, so I can't imagine the level of fear he has here. But these kudos, incredible kudos to these two sheriff's deputies who are risking themselves on this boat in very deep water to pull this driver to safety.
And Jim, we obviously hammer CNN, and rightly so, on a number of political things. But at least one reporter, and I'm guessing even more than that, this one is Ed Lavandera, actually helping with rescuers to try and rescue people. This was his report live at one home in Dickinson, Texas.
When we were about to leave this neighborhood, there was a woman who had kind of flagged us down that her and her two elderly parents were still stuck inside the home. So I'm going to put the mic down. We're going to help them try to get back into the boat so we can get them out of here. So I'm going to put the microphone down while we help them get into the boat.
So Lavandera actually helping to rescue people, and then he exercises what we almost never see in the media, Jim, restraint.
The daughter told us that her mother has Alzheimer's, so that's complicating the situation.
Yeah.
So let's be a little bit delicate here because I don't know what kind of condition her mother's in.
So they pulled away from that shot, and then another local reporter found this guy just not even from Houston, headed to Houston with his boat to try and help.
You guys just jumping in to help out?
Yes, sir.
Yeah?
So,
where are you coming from?
Texas City.
Texas City?
Yes, sir.
What are you going to do?
I'll go try to save some lives.
Yeah?
Go try to help save some lives. So, Jim, we're seeing the best of America in a lot of different ways, and it's oftentimes, unfortunately, in the worst of situations where we see that come out.
There are times where we've had false alarms or hurricanes have turned out to be not as bad. In writing about the morning jolt today, I looked back to Hurricane Rita, which was headed towards Houston. This is the last time they attempted a mandatory evacuation of Houston, and it did not go well. Nearly 100 people died just because of problems, complications, lack of insulin, medical attention. There was a bus that caught on fire. The short version, it's very, very difficult to move several million people in 24 hours' notice. So that's one of the things to keep in mind, is you're probably going to hear a lot of discussion about this in the coming days. In this case, this is as bad as everybody warned. There are times it turns out to be not as bad, but this is about as bad as it gets. You're hearing people arguing about whether this constitutes a once-in-a-century flooding or once-in-a-millennium flooding. This is more than most of Houston was ever designed to hold. I was kind of struck by the comment from earlier this week, or it was this morning, actually, one of the morning shows where somebody said, look, if you had to do it over again, you wouldn't put the city of Houston where it is. It is a broad floodplain, not too far from the ocean, with a in a path of, you know, potential hurricanes. And so they are in a really dire straits there. The only reason you can say this is not our, you know, one of the grimmest of our bad martinis is the fact that America and people in the area, people around the area, are rising to the challenge. And you're seeing stuff like this. And after, you know, so many weeks of seeing and months of seeing Americans angry at each other and seemingly politically at each other's throats and saying the, you know, believing the worst in each other, it is refreshing and a little bit inspiring to see people sticking their necks out and risking their lives and doing dangerous things in order to save other people. And as you know, people are noticing there's now this massive mobilization. Also, it's pretty good so far, it seems. FEMA is up to the task, or at the very least is throwing every conceivable tool at its disposal. Charities are kicking into higher gear. Everyone is on the move. Now, the bad news is this is really not, we're not out of the woods yet. The hurricane itself apparently is kind of drifting back towards the Gulf of Mexico. As you mentioned, the tornadoes are out there, but it really seems like now it's the floodwaters. And I have several friends who are watching those waters come closer and closer. Their paths of escape have been more or less blocked off by the floodwaters. There's a good chance this gets worse before it gets better. But it's nice to know that the whole country can come together and try to help people when they really need it.
You know folks who live there. I know a couple of people who live in the area. And just hearing their personal stories, it helps to kind of figure out how folks are getting by in the most difficult of times. No power. Sometimes they're flooded out of their bottom floor for sure, maybe even higher than that, depending on where they live. And basically their access is to their house and maybe a couple of neighbors in some situations. And like you said, it's likely to get worse before it gets better. So pray for less than expected rain and for folks to be rescued who need to. So, Jim, it feels weird to transition back to politics, but that's what we do here. So we're going to do it. And on to the second martini, which is all bad. And that is related to Antifa. This is courtesy of the Daily Mail. Violence has broken out between left and right-wing protesters after more than 100 black-clad, masked Antifa broke through police barricades at a rally against hate and assaulted at least four, including the leader of a pro-Trump conservative group. At least 10 arrests were made on Sunday in Berkeley, California, after the left-wing rally against hate confronted a handful of right-wing protesters at a No to Marxism in America rally. Antifa is short for anti-fascist. The arrest charges in the skirmishes at Civic Center Park were various but included assault and violating a prohibition on wearing masks. You know it's bad, Jim, when the people who are with the Antifa people are telling them to stop beating on people. The rest of the story says several thousand joined in the left-wing rally against hate intended as a counter to the anti-Marxism event, which was actually canceled after organizers said they had concerns about violence, apparently rightly so. A handful of people wearing shirts and signs in support of President Trump did turn up, however, and were quickly surrounded by the rally against hate marchers. And then, of course, were assaulted by the people who are against hate and supposedly violence. So, Jim, not only that, we got a little bit more of an insight into the mindset of Antifa. Here is one of their chants from Sunday.
No Trump, no wall, no USA.
Couldn't make that out. That's no Trump, no wall, no USA at all. So, Jim, talk about starting with a premise that some Americans might start listening to and then very quickly getting to the point where no one wants to be on your side. But it's good to expose these people as soon as possible.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, no Trump, some Americans might agree. No wall, some no USA at all. The hell with you guys. It's not outrageous to say this is an anti-American group. And who are you to say? Well, they're literally chanting no USA at all, right? It is no longer an epithet. It is no longer an insult. Anti-American is descriptive of this organization. There are times where the Antifa movement has really seemed like a giant social experiment in branding. meaning that if you call yourself anti-fascist, how fascist can you behave before people begin to notice the contradiction? And it's been painfully slow in the case of some examples. But it is worth noting, I mean, the coverage in the Washington Post this morning was brutal and basically said, look, no, this was, first of all, it said peaceful right-wing protest. Greg, have you ever heard that phrase before? I mean, right-wing is kind of this, by connotation, always negative, right? They're always bad. They're always the aggressors. You know, peaceful right-wing protest just acknowledges that there are some people who might, you know, describe themselves as conservative, however they characterize themselves. They were not there attempting to provoke a violent exchange. They were not there to. Really, what they were doing wasn't even all that controversial, unless you say, you know, ipso facto support of Trump is controversial. Fine, but that doesn't give the excuse to go up and hit somebody. And what I love, with the little details, it sounds like something out of a Christopher Buckley or maybe Thomas Wolfe novels, when they started, honest to goodness, beating someone with shields that said no hate. That sounds like a metaphor. It sounds like a really heavy-handed metaphor. In fact, it sounds like the sort of thing an editor would say, come on, nobody's that glaringly obvious in contradiction of their professed values like that, but here we are. I think what's particularly appalling about this, though, Greg, is that the police in the area basically didn't want to have a violent confrontation with Antifa, so they basically gave up. They let him take over the park. And there's a part of me that says, hey, police, this is kind of your job to keep control of a situation like this. When you surrender territory, like you're basically saying, these guys are the real police. We no longer have a monopoly on violence. And this is, by the way, what causes people to turn to vigilantism. This is what makes people believe the police are not going to protect you. You have to take your own safety into your own lives. And these crazy guys in black masks are running around assaulting people. I mean, what do you expect when the police refuse to intervene in situations like this? So, you know, if there's 200 guys there coming as protests, then you need 300 cops. You need the manpower there to keep control of your streets, or else a frightened citizenry will take their own control. So it's exasperating. It should not be overlooked in all of the obviously necessary hurricane coverage. I think the serious discussion about whether Antifa is simply those, you know, those wacky left-wing kids, or a genuinely dangerous kind of underground movement. This is a discussion worth having once we've helped Texas get through the worst of it.
Absolutely right. All right, let's move on to even more ridiculous news here in our crazy martini. And this headline from NBC News: everyone's running for president in 2020. Jim, I didn't know you had thrown your hat in the ring. Congratulations. Look, there's a Maryland congressman at the Iowa State Fair just being a normal person enjoying the fair with my family. And there's the mayor of Los Angeles stumping for a candidate in what happens to be Manchester, New Hampshire. Oh, and over there, a billionaire former reality TV star. Sound familiar? Is beating the president in polls. Just 6 months after President Donald Trump's inauguration and more than 2 years out from the first 2020 presidential nominating contest in Iowa, New Hampshire, every Democrat seems to think he or she could be the next president. They got this progressive activist quoting, every senator wakes up humming hail to the chief. Now that includes just about any Democrat who isn't a convicted felon. Even a fairly conservative list of potential candidates stretches beyond two dozen names, and next year's midterm elections are likely to further swell the ranks of White House hopefuls. They talk about the tried and true names, you know, the Joe Bidens, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren. But then there's other people who want to be kind of the outsider. Jason Kander, who lost the Senate race in Missouri last year. Tim Ryan from Ohio, who challenged Nancy Pelosi for House Democratic leader. The mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti. The also-rans from 2016, like O'Malley and Lincoln Chafee. But then they've got this collage of pictures, Jim, which is, if you read them all through the list, it would almost be like you're announcing who's going to perform at an AMA or a Grammy concert. Klobuchar, Booker, Ryan, O'Malley, Castro, Gillibrand, Merkley, Chafee, Biden, Hickenlooper, Newsom, Inslee, Franken, Sherrod Brown, Sheryl Sandberg, Chris Murphy, Kamala Harris, Andrew Cuomo, Mark Zuckerberg, Mark Cuban, Jason Kander, Elizabeth Warren, Mark Warner, Eric Garcetti, Terry McAuliffe, John Delaney, Seth Moulton, Bernie Sanders, and of course, The Rock. So, Jim, how are we going to make this one work? I don't even know if a March Madness bracket's big enough for this.
If you felt like the Republican primary back in 2016 did not, regardless of whether you're happy Trump won, I, among others, felt like this was not really the best possible method to select one. I'd come out and say I was a big fan of Bobby Jindal. He never even got into a prime time debate. There were simply too many candidates to put everybody up on one stage at one time. So they had to split it up and you know, do it in the pregame show, so to speak, the preseason football equivalent. And, of course, then the main group. And, of course, obviously, if you were on the if you were not in the primetime group, you weren't going to get the larger audience. And people might not even notice you were running or give you really a fair shake or serious consideration. And it kind of turned into this self-fulfilling prophecy. Because you weren't high in the polls, you weren't going to get a chance to appear on the main debate. Because you weren't in the main debate, you weren't going to get a lot of attention before the audience. The audience wouldn't pay attention to you, so you'd stay low in the polls, and it was a vicious cycle. Now, maybe this is not a tragedy in the case of Jim Gilmore or George Pataki, or I could go down a long list, actually, come to think of it. There's just endless feeling of like everybody and their brothers like, well, I'm going to run. Obama served two terms. Republicans, there's this pendulum effect in politics, the best chance we got. Even if I have no chance of actually winning, I'm going to get to be a celebrity out of it. I'm going to get to be taken seriously for a stretch. But let's face it, we weren't really thinking about what Jim Gilmore was doing for much time before the 2016 campaign. And then for at least a few minutes in those debates, we had to pay attention. And then, of course, we'd report that, lo and behold, he had gotten an entire, 11 votes in the state of Iowa. Nothing has happened to change the behavior of the candidates and to change the incentives. The public humiliation of doing badly just isn't enough to discourage these candidates. So if you're John Mulaney, who I thought was a comedian, we made fun of him a little bit earlier, everybody and their brother is going to jump in. And it's probably not going to turn, I have a feeling people who probably deserve a longer look aren't going to get them. These debates are going to turn into, one after another saying, oh, you think you hate Trump? I hate Trump even more, and my suspicion is it's not going to be probably the public will not be well served by what I once called globs of human cholesterol refusing to get out of the way and to actually let serious candidates who seriously have a chance of being the next commander in chief having this. Now, Republicans might say, this is good news. The Democrats will be in chaos with 12 candidates, 18 candidates, maybe even more than 20 candidates. But I don't think presidential campaigns are supposed to be seen as cable news gig auditions. And I'd like to see this the process of selecting the next president taken more seriously.
And that's ultimately what's going on here. Maybe there's a few people who obviously are thought to be in the top tier. Other people who think because of what happened in 2016, maybe the way things shake out in 2020 could work out in their favor. But most of these people are just looking for more notoriety, higher speaking fees, the cable news gigs, the contributor gigs, which are pretty lucrative and so forth. That's really what's going on here, right?
At one point, I think it was Anderson Cooper asked Lincoln Chafee, there's a name from the past, who had been a Republican up until 2 years earlier. He was a Republican, then he switched to the independent, only became a Democrat 2 years earlier, and yet he felt he was the person who the Democrats should dominate in 2016. And Anderson pointed this out. There's a lot of like, why are you here? Why should we give you the time of day? What give us, one? And of course, Chafee really did not have a particularly compelling argument for that. Among his reasons was he wanted to switch America to the metric system. At some point, you start wondering, why are we leaving out Vermin Supreme, that nut job up in New Hampshire who keeps walking around with a boot on his head? At some point, you have to have a standard for candidates. And I don't, to me, if you haven't been elected statewide at least once, I'm very skeptical of your ability. Maybe there's a really impressive mayor, or maybe there's a really good House member. But look, when people complain the media is not taking them seriously, sometimes these candidates don't seem to be taking it seriously. So the other thing also is that the presidency, the people are going to look, obviously, because of the experience of Trump, they'll say, okay, we no longer need to be a senator or a governor or have some sort of significant record. But I really don't believe the presidency is an entry-level job. I really want to know who you are and what you're going to stand for before you end up in office. And I feel like this trend toward celebrity candidates or anybody who just wants to show up and the party has to take them seriously. Ultimately, if we want voters to take this seriously, we need candidates who take this seriously as well.
Lincoln Chafee actually did win statewide a couple times, so maybe we need to raise the bar even higher. Yeah.
Well, people need to, seriously, if people who follow politics for a living have a hard time remembering who you are, it's a bad sign.
Gee, glad it's not a circus. Jim, have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, see you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Our prayers continue with the folks of Southeast Texas. We pray that you would stay safe and that the greatest dangers would subside very soon. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.